Welcome to the She Read, She Said podcast,
where we read and discuss books about women written by women.
We're your hosts, Megan
and Kate, so sit back,
settle in,
and let the pages come to life.
Well, hello there.
Welcome.
Welcome to a very special personal episode.
You could say that we are doing a deep dive on the story of us. These are the pages of our lives.
Because today, as many of you know, we are going to be answering some of your questions because we did ask for questions and questions were sent.
Questions were given. So we thought it would just be a good idea because we've been doing this podcast for 8 months now.
Mm-hmm.
That it was time to just put out an episode where you could ask questions. I mean, you can always ask questions at any point. I want to put that out there. You may ask questions at any point and we will answer them. But we thought we would just open up the floor to you guys to see what you want to know about us so that as we bring you into our reading life, our reading corner, you can feel like you just have a better sense of us and who we are, what we're about, all of that stuff.
Yeah, because I feel like in our episodes, occasionally we will share little tidbits about ourselves, but usually we're pretty book focused, mm-hmm. which is the whole point of having a book podcast is to talk about the book and the story that someone else wrote.
Mm-hmm.
But we just thought since we're currently traveling, we are in Yorkshire and we're heading to Edinburgh tomorrow because we are kicking off our Scotland fantasy tour, which we're so excited about. But we figured that this would be the perfect time to have a little sit down and to just get a little bit more personal.
Plus, it's Mercury retrograde and the solar eclipse really begging us all to look inward, slow down, and reflect on our lives. So while today might be chaotic because I swear to God, my brain glitches when the cosmos are being just a cacophony of chaos.
Absolutely.
It will hopefully be enlightening all the same, despite potential mouth chaos, as has been happening to me the last couple days.
I am always prone to mouth chaos, always. But yes, it's been a little bit more intense recently with the events in the cosmos, as you said.
I'm just a girl that's sensitive to the cosmos. I'm just a little astrology girl.
But we're going to have a go anyway. We are finding the strength and courage to move forward despite all of the possible tongue-tiedness.
Like the heroines before us, I will find my inner perseverance so that I may talk about myself indulgently.
Absolutely. Well, before we get started, we just want to say a quick thank you to everyone who submitted questions.
Yes.
We got some really fantastic ones, and we are going to share, I think, a pretty good batch of what we've received today. But we just want to thank everyone for messaging us, commenting, all of the things.
Yeah.
We love you. We see you. We appreciate you.
Well, now getting into it, before we get into our questions, I feel like we should state, because I know a lot of people find us just based on one episode, like they've read a book, they go into Spotify or Apple or wherever, and they search it, and then our podcast comes up. So I know we have followers coming in kind of at different points. So for those of you who don't know, Megan and I are sisters.
What?
Megan was there on the day of my birth.
I was. I will never forget it.
And she will never forget it because she is 9 years older than me and therefore at that age has a solid memory.
So I will never forget it.
And yes, it was the best day of her entire life.
And to give you some context to where we are now, we don't need to get exact with ages, but Kate is in her 20s. I'm in my 30s. So just to give kind of a general sense of where we are in our own lives now.
I like that we won't just say our age because ageism is real. I like you say we are timeless and I'm like, ageism is the enemy of all.
So that's a great insight into how we feel about our own ages and aging in general.
Oh, and also, I am the lighter brunette one on your cover, and Megan is the darker brunette slash, I think in our picture, you look like you have black hair.
I do look like I have black hair.
So for those of you who've ever wondered, okay, I know whose voice is whose, but whose face is that? There you go.
You're welcome.
Hard-hitting journalism right now.
Okay, so let's get into some of these questions.
Okay.
So let's kick it off with Cassidy's question of how did you come up with the idea of the podcast?
Well, I feel like I need to throw that one to you.
I had the idea to do a literary podcast, to do a book club podcast because Kate and I at the time, and we still are, were getting into writing our own books. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be a really fun way to kind of force ourselves to stay up with reading the trends, mm-hmm. reading what's out, because sometimes when life is really busy, you need an actual excuse to sit down and read, or at least that's how it's been in my life.
Yeah. And I think that would be more for you, because I think at the time, and I've talked about this, I feel like especially on Patreon that I was talk about being like a chaos gremlin mm-hmm. with reading, that I, in the last couple years before we started our podcast, was just shredding through books.
Yeah. And I was, I feel like I was just kind of on a bit of a break with reading fiction books. Yeah. I was doing stuff within my business at the time that required a lot of nonfiction reading. And I just yeah. was really, really busy and mentally kind of congested with all of that. It was a good period of time in my life, but I was very happy to kind of move on and open the door to getting back into more fiction reading and tapping back more into like the creative side of my brain. Mm-hmm. So we were just kind of talking one day about what we were currently working on and where we just sort of wanted to take our careers, our futures, just what we wanted to really do in life. And I just had this idea of what if we have like an accountability podcast that at least for me helps me get back in touch with reading and just really like leaning into the joys of storytelling and characters yeah. and all the things that Kate and I love and we talk about all the time anyway. So it was really just a nice way to kind of convert that into a bigger platform for what we want to do in life.
Yeah. And it was the perfect timing for me because I was just closing my business. Mm-hmm. I had had a business where I was doing Reiki and clinical hypnotherapy. And while I still love both of those things and still really dedicate a lot of time to self-betterment and using a lot of those tools, I was just kind of at a point where it wasn't necessarily a passion to be doing it for others all the time.
Yeah.
Same. Having a business is its own job separate from whatever service you provide. And I think just what was going on in my business, I was tired.
Yeah.
And I just needed to kind of close that chapter. And I had no idea where I was going next. And I think this was just such a blessing to have passion. Mm-hmm. Again, I think this was just such a passion project for us. I think anyone who knows how podcasting works or does podcasting knows that you need to love doing it because it can be a labor and it should be a labor of love. I think this was just the perfect passion project that's ignited a lot of other passion projects. So yeah. This was kind of like ground zero for a lot of other things that we have come out with, like our Scotland fantasy tour and a lot of other things that are on the horizon for kind of like our brand.
Yeah.
Sounds pretentious, but like our brand.
Yeah, no, it was really nice, I think, especially where we are right now, having been in this for roughly, 8 months or so, mm-hmm. that I think for me, with my work life, kind of the creative realm, despite the fact that that has been something that I've been in more in my free time, like I've always wanted to be a writer, I've always been connected to that aspect of myself, but I've never really done that in this way where it's what I do for a living.
Yeah.
Those two things have always felt very separate to me. And for whatever reason, that's just been the case. And it's kind of been drilled into my brain that you go get the real job and then you do that on the side. I just look to myself for accepting that as true. And yeah. to have this podcast be something that is what we do for a living. And like you said, it has opened the door to so many other creative projects and business opportunities. And we are just delighted.
Yeah. So nice idea, Megan.
Thank you.
Thumbs up for you.
It really worked out.
Round of applause.
Thank you, Cassidy, for that question.
And kind of piggybacking off of that question, we have a question from Lena who asks, would you have ever guessed you would get into podcasting specifically within the bookish world? For me, the answer is no. I think, like you, I've always just had a separation. I think growing up, I was never the kid that had a super clear vision, no matter how delusional, mm-hmm. of what I wanted to do with my life, because I think I just wasn't connected to like my passions mm-hmm. as much. And I think I grew up having this feeling that I really needed to be of service
yeah.
to someone. I needed, through my career, my vocation, that I needed to be of service. So I feel like I just would never in the past have given myself permission to just think, hey, you can do something just because you enjoy it, and kind of like selfishly indulge in that.
Absolutely. I feel the same way. I think going back to what I was saying earlier, like that's exactly it, of feeling like your work life and what you're passionate about have to be separate. And I know that people have careers and do jobs that they are so passionate about.
Yeah.
This is not a new idea, but I feel like for you and I, we've just both been in this boat where, like you said, feeling like you need to be of service, maybe in a slightly different way.
Yeah. Like if I'm not directly like altering, saving, transforming someone else's life through whatever goodness or knowledge or whatever that looks like, if I'm not being of service in that way, then it's like I shouldn't be doing it. I think I grew up having that feeling, and that's probably why I never really had the clearest sense of what that would be. And I also think growing up, I had a perception that Megan was the really creative one, and that it's like that was her thing.
There can only be one.
There can only be one. It's like I didn't want to be the younger sister that's just like, oh, Megan likes writing, so I like writings. And like that's a very private part of my life that I think even like you and our family just wouldn't even know about, that like growing up, I would be journaling and writing stories in my book. I would do like a weird storytelling poem situation for like if I had a big feeling, I would go like tell a story of someone else having that big feeling and those kinds of things. But I was very private about it. And I was doing that probably when I was like 9 or 10, like really young. That just felt like, ugh, I don't want to be like embarrassing.
I mean, newsflash, I think if you are a writer in any capacity, you are just prone to feeling like what you're doing is embarrassing.
It's embarrassing.
Even though it's not.
No, it's not. But there's just that thing. And I think I was just very aware of that as a young child, probably like too aware. So no, I would not have guessed that I would have gotten into that, let alone that I really up until recently had a horrid fear of public speaking. And I know that this technically isn't public speaking in terms of I'm on a stage and I'm performing and blah, blah, blah. But just the knowledge that people are listening right now, that would have been enough to send me over the edge.
Yeah, it's really interesting because, full disclosure, I have actually been part of a literary podcast before a few years ago. I had a podcast with a friend of mine where we also talked about books. And probably more so with that run of it, I was someone that had really bad social anxiety. I still struggle a little bit with feeling like I'm expressing myself in a way that makes sense without getting tongue-tied. Like, I feel like I have all sorts of mental to actual speech connection issues. And so doing this podcast has actually been really, it's like healing in that way.
Yeah.
Because it does force me to work through those things and to work through the insecurity of feeling like I can't adequately express myself and get my thoughts out and say it in a way that makes sense to others, because that is just something that I've always struggled with.
Yeah.
And the confidence of speaking up, sharing an opinion, all of those things. So this has just been kind of an extension of just helping me be more confident with that as well, which has been really helpful and at times kind of maddening.
Yeah.
Because we edit our own episodes.
Yeah.
So we have to listen to ourselves in moments where we maybe stumble. But overall, it's just been really fun. Like if you were to ask me this a few years ago, I don't think I ever would have thought that I would be part of a podcasting community and doing this. But I am so happy that life took that turn, because it's just been wonderful to talk about things that we're passionate about and to have fun with it, to bring an element of joy into our work. And I don't know, just like we love storytelling, and it's just so fun to share that with our community as well. So to even think about having the community that we have now, it's just mind blowing.
It is. That would be the correct word.
To meet so many other like-minded women who are passionate about the same things that we are, other writers, like people who are in the same place that we're in. This podcast has been just such a big and unexpected blessing in so many ways that I just never anticipated.
Yeah, I completely agree. So thank you so much, Lena, for that question. And next up, we have a question from our lovely listener, Liv. She asks, what has been your favorite and least favorite book you've read for the podcast? Liv is getting in there trying to stir the pot.
As she should.
As she should.
That's a great question. I have to say, just overall, I think we've been pretty lucky in that we've enjoyed most of what we've read.
I would say 90% of what we've read, I could say that like 80% of the book, if not more, I thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah. And it's like, there's different types of enjoyment as well. There's the books that, oh my gosh, they're for you. You'll reread them. You have that personal attachment to. There's other books that are just entertaining and you just enjoy them during the read and you're happy to never really read them again, but you still like them.
And it's like, I wasn't bored. Like, I was thoroughly entertained, even if I think, you know what, this isn't that great, but I'm entertained. And that, like you said, that's a form of joy.
Yeah. There have been a couple that have not been for us.
No.
And I think without a shadow of a doubt for me, we'll start with the negative and then move into the positive. We'll end on a higher note.
This is so hard. I hate being negative.
I know. I do too. Because at the end of the day, as writers ourselves, like everyone who's put books out has put in the work. They've accomplished something and that should be recognized and honored and all of the things that go with that. But for me, and I feel like you're going to agree with me, I would say my least favorite book that I've read thus far on the podcast is The Unfortunate Side Effects of Heartbreak and Magic.
Yeah, that was also my least favorite.
I was really excited for this book. It was my idea to do it on the podcast. I told you, I was like, oh, we have to do this. There's this book coming out and it sounds really fun and it'll be great for the season and all of that. And it was just not for me.
It like broke your confidence for a couple weeks because you're like, I chose the one book we haven't liked that much. And like, you've chosen the ones we like and I don't want to choose any.
I was like, I can't trust myself anymore. I can't pick anything for our podcast.
You're like, I don't know what the people want because I wanted this and I didn't like this.
Yeah, it was a tough time for me.
It was a really dark hour.
Yeah, it's just like it had elements that I usually like and I really wanted to like it and just was not for me.
Yeah, unfortunately, that one just wasn't it for me either. I mean, there's been a couple others that I think definitely, like when we talk about at the beginning of our episodes, it's like, is this for you or is it not for you? That I think we've read a couple others that I would just say aren't for me, but I read them and I think I can see how this is for someone else.
Yeah.
And it's not that I think it's bad. There might be elements that I'm not a fan of. And usually the things I'm not a fan of is because I view it through like, is this slightly problematic? I think those are a lot of times the books that I don't enjoy because I'm like, I think there's problematic aspects to this book because if everything is good and jolly, I think I can usually get on board and enjoy it. But if I have to be like, ugh, is that okay? Like in The Unfortunate Side Effects of Heartbreak and Magic, I'm like, let's not condone stealing a dog.
No.
Let's not condone that. Let's not condone emotionally cheating on your potentially pregnant spouse.
Also, if it looks like someone has attempted to end their life, let's maybe look into that more. There's just so many things that just weren't it. And no, I think you bring up a good point though, because again, just because something's not for us, it doesn't mean that it's not for other people. And I think that's the wonderful thing about books. Like, I think I read a lot of stuff that maybe a lot of other people just, it wouldn't be for them.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And that's why it's so beautiful that we have such a variety out there. So there you go.
There you go.
But to end on a high note, what was your favorite?
This was a hard one because we've read a lot of books that I've really enjoyed for different reasons. And I think in this is a cheater answer, but I'm going to give two.
I have two as well.
It's probably the same because God forbid we just like have a different take on things. But it's the Shepherd duology. Mm-hmm. So One Dark Window and Two Twisted Crowns.
Yeah.
And I chose this as my favorite because I was just so completely surprised by it. I hadn't read anything like it before. Like we talked about in our episode, just the gothic elements, the fantasy fairy tale elements, just all of it was so beautifully woven together. It was a really unique magic system. It wasn't the huge epic fantasy that sometimes I go for. It was just like a perfect, cozy, gothic fantasy read. And like I said, it was just so unique that there are some other books we've done for our podcast, like some of the Sarah J. Maas books and all of that, that I absolutely adore. But I'd read them before, so I kind of knew, obviously, what was coming and how much I loved them. So as like a new read that just felt so fresh.
Yeah.
I think that was my favorite to experience.
I just adored that duology and I love One Dark Window, but for me, Two Twisted Crowns.
Yeah.
Because of the romance in that, that was just everything that I wanted in that story. So for me, I would probably say specifically Two Twisted Crowns.
Mm-hmm.
We are extremely lucky because going into our Scotland Fantasy Tour, our group voted to read One Dark Window.
Yeah.
So we are also currently rereading that, and it is just as wonderful going through it again.
It holds up.
So that was a really nice treat that we didn't push that on anyone.
No.
The people voted, so we get to go talk about that out in Scotland next week, which is super exciting. I do, for me, want to throw a little shout out, though, to Throne of Glass, because we did read specifically Throne of Glass, that book, for this podcast.
Your favorite for our Patreon. That was your favorite series that we've done on Patreon so far.
Yes. And so I think kind of kickstarting it on this podcast was just really fun, because obviously you wanted me to read that for such a long time.
Yeah,
and
I did.
Finally getting in and like meeting the characters and everything.
That gave me like the sickest satisfaction is you finally reading that series.
She's a sick, sick, sicko.
Being like, oh, what page are you at? Oh, your heart's going to break soon, but I won't say a word.
I know. She kept saying like, well, do you think she's going to end up with so-and-so or so-and-so? And then that story
took
the whole
turn. Yeah,
for those
of you who've listened to our Crescent City episode, you also know that I've led her astray in other ways, and I get sick satisfaction from it, and I'm not sorry.
So yeah, so for both of us, we can go ahead and give Rachel Gillig a round of applause for writing those beautiful books.
Thank you for your service, Rachel.
We salute you.
And thank you, Liv, for your question.
Okay, so our next question comes from Anna, and she asks, what's one thing you've really taken away from doing the podcast?
I mean, I would say what we were talking about earlier in terms of just doing things for joy and public speaking. Honestly, that was a really big one. But I think a really big takeaway that I've had, and just like a lesson that I've really internalized doing the podcast and reading all of these stories, is that there's always something good to find.
Absolutely.
Even in the books that are not for us. Mm-hmm. I think there are storylines. I mean, using the unfortunate side effects of Heartbreak and Magic as an example, we loved the protagonist's brother.
Absolutely.
So in every story, I really believe that. Mm-hmm. And I think we've seen it, that like we have read some books that are just really not for us, but there's always something good to find, whether it's a character, a storyline, even just like the vibes, like whatever element you want to seek out, there's something good to find in every story. And I think I really hold on to that, especially because with books, it's art. So of course, it's subjective. And I think when something is subjective, you really see a lot of negativity around bookish opinions sometimes that to me, it feels like an overwhelming wave of negativity.
Yeah.
And I think on the podcast, I really try to find the good, because I think it's there. And I don't personally care to be another voice that's adding to the negative collective opinion on whatever.
Yeah.
So I think that's something for me. And I think that has transferred to other aspects of my life as well, whether it is just silly things like how I feel about a movie or a show, but I think also just people and situations and all the things, that there's just always something good to find.
I think that's a really good point, because I think sometimes the reading collective, not everyone, but
not our reading collective.
Not our reading collective. But I think sometimes people will read a book and they want more of that specific book, that specific story or trope or whatever it is. And I think it's really easy to get kind of pulled into the lens of, I want this book to be this. And when it doesn't deliver exactly whatever expectations you've held in your mind, then it's an easy path to the negativity.
Yeah.
And I think that doing the podcast, and for me, just reading some books that I just don't think I would have picked up for myself, just because it's not what I normally read or what I'm normally drawn to, it's been really wonderful, because it just kind of forces me to go into it with an open mind. And like you said, it's really easy to find the good when you just approach something fresh.
Yeah, and just accepting it for what it is. Yeah. Judging it based off of what it's supposed to be, not what you want it to be.
Yeah. So like for me, I've said before on the podcast that I usually don't really read contemporary romance. Mm-hmm. That's not my go-to genre. We've read some contemporary romance on this podcast, and I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Again, that's not going to be the thing that I go into the bookshop and pick up for myself to read in my free time, most likely. But kind of being forced to do it on the podcast, I've loved it. It's been so fun to read.
And it tickles me.
It's been so fun to read and like talk about and all of that. And I just really, I don't know, I really enjoy kind of being forced into things like that sometimes. It's really nice, I think, for us being a writer to read outside of your genre, to learn. And I think the podcast has been a really great teaching tool. With every author that we read, there is a valuable lesson, if not many, to be learned.
Yeah.
And so I know you and I, because we've talked about this, we've kind of been like a sponge with this, just sort of absorbing like what's our experience, looking at the technical and the storytelling aspect of all of these books. And it's just been really helpful and like really enriching.
I think it's also really helpful talking about just reading stuff that isn't for you. It's like, okay, why is this not for me?
Yeah.
Is it maybe something as simple because the story structure just isn't for me. So as a writer, it's like, okay, I'm not going to do it this way then. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, if I'm reading a story like this, I want it to hit a certain beat and it didn't deliver. So learning in that way that there's always something good, but also using the quote unquote bad as a learning tool.
Thank you, Anna, for that question. Our next question comes from Haley, and she asks, what do you guys do outside of podcasting?
For a bit, we weren't doing anything because having two podcasts was kind of running our life while also trying to get our tour up and going.
It was hermit days.
Those were some very deep hermit days. But in general, I mean,
like, what do we do now that we have a little bit more time to ourselves to actually do some things outside of the podcast?
I don't know. I feel like I'm really boring in that I don't have any like interesting niche hobbies or anything like that. I mean, you and I as fans of storytelling also really love watching shows and television.
Yes.
And I know we have a question coming up more about that. So we'll talk about some things in a minute. But I mean, reading, writing, I mean, you and I really love to travel. So I think that's a really big part of our lives in terms of how can we make this happen?
Yeah.
Obviously, we're doing our tour this upcoming week. And so we've taken this as an opportunity to just stay abroad for a little bit. So our next couple episodes will still be in different areas in the UK and then in Ireland.
We also, on the note of travel, we love to hike. We've been up on the mm-hmm. moors. We love to exercise in that way. We like to walk. Again, that sounds super boring, but we
we're big walkers.
We love a walk.
I think when you're a creative person, walking is the best thing you can do. Yeah. I have had so many story ideas, so many just kind of like, I call them downloads of information of what will go in my book, all of those things. And I think any kind of creative person, just pop in a playlist, walk, and kind of sit in that energy and see what comes to you. I kind of swear by that.
Yeah. And you and I, we also, I mean, like, we binge watch shows, like you said, we watch movies, we like a good documentary, we like we to brainstorm on our projects. We're in the future going to be doing a project together that involves writing a script, so we do like talking about that stuff.
And also, I feel like this sounds weird. I think all of this sounds boring or weird or like that's not anything, but it is because it's our lives. We're really into like the spiritual manifestation, unconscious mind world. So I think a lot of the things we do kind of revolve around that.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of discussions and partake in practices just integrated throughout our day that is geared towards just having like clean energy, clean unconscious mind, really putting in the energy to be the best versions of ourselves in that way.
Yeah. And a lot of times that means like doing the hard work and sitting with aspects of ourselves that don't feel good or that we need to work yeah. through. And yeah, like you said, there's just daily practice.
Yeah. Like journaling, meditation. I mean, I think I view my walking as moving meditation.
Yeah,
because
me too.
I'm a fire sign, and fire signs, for those of you who don't know, fire signs with meditation, movement is actually a really beneficial form of meditation for you. So maybe if you're not so good at just sitting there in complete silence, try some movement. There's so many forms of meditation that is so phenomenal for you.
Yeah, that is definitely my favorite form. And like you mentioned earlier, we're both clinical hypnotherapists and Reiki certified. So we incorporate all that into our daily life.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not the people that it's like, well, everything's fine. Like nothing's wrong.
No,
we're really good about knowing who we are as people. And like what we need to do to kind of move through anything that's sort of holding us back from feeling good and confident about what we want to do in life. So sometimes yeah. it takes a little bit of work.
I think that's been a really big part of both of our lives for the last probably couple years
yeah.
is just really diving deep into all of that stuff that maybe some people would describe as woo-woo.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? It's really worked for me and I'm a much happier and better person.
Oh, absolutely.
Doing all of that. So I think that's just a kind of thing that seeps into everything you do.
Mm-hmm.
That it feels like that's not like a hobby, but also I invest a lot of my time learning about these things,
yeah.
integrating them. You and I just sit and talk about things.
We put it into practice.
Yeah.
Actively. Probably. It sounds boring, but that's just the like, real I cook. Answer.
Megan bakes sometimes.
I bake sometimes, which is relaxing for me. I think we've just been so busy that we really haven't had the opportunity to invest in any other big hobbies.
Do you know what is something I would like to get back into that you and I used to do all the time?
What?
I would love to get back into hockey.
Yes.
Megan and I used to go to hockey games all the time when we lived in California. Our team was the Ducks, the Anaheim Ducks, because that's who was closest to us. And we had regional loyalty.
We did.
But for my 18th birthday, we went up and spent the week in Anaheim, which for those of you who know Anaheim, that's not a place you would spend a week in if you didn't have an ulterior motive for being there.
No, there's hockey and there's Disneyland.
And we went up there and we went to their practices. We went to like 3 games. Mm-hmm. We went balls to the wall for the Anaheim Ducks.
We had some great playoff tickets as well.
We did.
We really lived it up during that period of our life, which was quite some time ago.
Yeah.
But I would also love to get back into that. It's the one sport that I get excited watching and that I absolutely love.
So thank you so much, Haley, for your question.
And I believe you have another question as well.
Yeah, the next 2 questions also come from Haley. So her next one is, are you guys still planning on writing a book?
Oh, yes.
I mean, do you want to give an update?
It's really nice being here in the UK, specifically Yorkshire, because this is actually where my book takes place. So just being in the surrounding, and now that our lives are easing up a bit in terms of having time, I'm really ready to like knock it out in its entirety and get the first draft done and polished. I know that Sarah J. Maas posted recently that she's up somewhere in the mountains drafting, and it's like, that's where I am.
Yeah.
That's
where we want to be.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So I think once the tour is over, we're going to have the opportunity to do that. So I would ideally, within the next 6 months, love to have the first draft polished.
Ooh.
That's my goal.
Yeah. I mean, because you've been conceptualizing and working on it for a long time.
Yeah. I don't know if other writers' experiences, I know everyone's process is different, but for me, I've had my story idea for a long time, but I really needed to sit with it and kind of let it grow into what it needs to be or should be. And that's just taken time. And my life the past probably like 15 years has just been really chaotic with jobs and schedules, and none of it has really been conducive to creative flow. Mm-hmm. So I think now is the best time for me to write the book, like where I'm at in life, and it's ready now. Like I think for me, it just took time. Some things took time to work through and to get right. I don't know. I'm just a big believer in divine timing with all of that.
Yeah.
That sometimes you have a story, but maybe you need to experience something firsthand or meet someone or, I don't know, just have more life experience before you can write it the way that it deserves to be written.
I mean, Sarah J. Maas worked on Throne of Glass for like 10 years before that first book came out.
And I love that.
Look at how good that series is.
It's like there's no regrets because it feels right to me now, like where it's at. And I'm so excited and happy about it. And it's just about writing the story that you want to read. So
yeah,
that's what I'm doing. And I know that that's what you're doing as well.
Yeah. I mean, I've written a book, not published. Don't think I've published
There's
it.
There's a massive draft.
There is a monstrous draft that I had an idea for this book a couple years ago. At that point, I had no aspirations of being a writer or anything. I was reading again. So I think I felt like I was in the magic of storytelling and all these things and having that feeling of, oh my God, wouldn't it be wonderful if I could produce something that other people felt this way about? I think like that longing of wanting to put my stamp of magic in the world in that way. And so I had an idea for a book, and I kind of actually fairly quickly just started writing scenes that would come to me thinking like, I don't know what this is, but it's fun. Why not do it? And then I think slowly, but also very quickly, that turned into a very real aspiration for me. And I wrote the book. It's like I've written it and like rewritten it and doing the millions of changes that you do. And at this point, I don't know if that is a book that I'm going to put into the world.
Or just a practice book.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think I really needed to prove that I could do it. That I could make something from nothing.
Yeah.
That I had the words to say that I could even do that. Because Some people just can't. It's not everyone's gift to do it. So in that way, I'm so glad I did it and it's there. And it's like, maybe I will. Maybe I'll go back and like do a cleanup and rewrite it or whatever. I don't think that's my priority right now, but I'm so glad I did it because it is such a special and personal story for me. And it was a contemporary romance with a lot of heart, I would like to say. I would like to think my perception of my book is probably not what it actually is. But I think I just really needed to know that I could do it, that I could go and have something that is semi-structured that I enjoy doing and that, again, I could do it, that I wouldn't just sit there looking at my screen like, ugh, I don't even have words to say. I don't have words to put on a page.
I personally think that you should go back when the time is right for you because mm-hmm. you've told me a lot about this story. You haven't let me read any of it yet, but I think it is a story that would hit home with a lot of people and that a lot of people would enjoy. I'm no expert when it comes to contemporary romance, but from what you've told me, it's a book that I would love to read. Again, this is just your process. So you could, yeah. you know, write this first, come back to it later and work on another project in between. Yeah. I just think it's really interesting. And this is why I love hearing other writers, no matter where you're at, if you're just starting out or professionals who have been doing this for 40, 50 years, mm-hmm. their process, because it's just so different. And it's like, I know that recently a lot of people have been talking about how with the Crescent City series that Sarah J. Maas, she wrote was like 250,000 words in a yeah. first draft and then checked it out. I've written a massive draft of my own book a few years ago and was like, this just isn't right. Like, yeah. this just isn't what I want it to be. I just find it fascinating what we all go through as writers and just having to be fine with it mm-hmm. because eventually it'll get you to where you need to be.
So I'm holding on to that. And because I have written a book and put it to the side, I've actually been, I think I'm in the brainstorming phase of another book/book series that would be more of a fantasy story because you guys know I love a fantasy and I've had some pretty clear ideas and downloads that feel very much like a part of me and who I am. So that's what I'm working on right now.
I mean, I think it's really fun to be in the space with you now that you're working on a series because I'm also doing a series and yeah. there's just extra challenges and maddening things that come out with mapping a series.
Yes, I will say that is a big lesson I took away from writing the draft of my other book is that I pantsed that more. And then I had to go back and like change things. Like you have a new idea and it's like, oh, well, then that kind of like has this micro domino effect for yeah. the whole book. Rather than if I had just sat and mapped it out, then I would have had a much more linear way of moving through the book. But of course, because I was just trying to figure out what I was even doing, I had to pants it. But just knowing that and going through that experience, I'm like, I will not be pantsing. I believe in some light pantsing, but mm-hmm. in terms of like the big story moments to hit, especially with a series, I'm going to have to be doing some serious mapping because pantsing, complete pantsing was so stressful. I'm going to be doing a lot more mapping.
Yeah. And I think it's also fun because obviously with fantasy, you have to do world building. I don't yeah. know if I've said this on the podcast. The story I'm doing, it's like a gothic Victorian kind of like mystery adventure. I'm not quite sure how to exactly categorize it. But the world in my book is also one that requires extensive world building and also historical research. Mm-hmm. So it's really fun to also be in that space where it's yeah. not like you just show up and there's a little bit of world building, but you can kind of focus elsewhere. It's like, no, you have to have all of this in order mm-hmm. before you can really start feeling like you can polish a draft because it all has to make sense. And the continuity has to be there and the history needs to be clear and all of the things. So it's really fun in like a selfish way to kind of be in the same space. Well, just so that we can kind of share the insanity of like, yeah. oh, I'm doing this. And you can be like, yeah, I know because I'm doing this. And it's just kind of nice in that way.
Yeah.
But that being said, I do hope that you go back to the other book.
Yeah. It might just need to sit for a bit. It's like 150,000 words too long.
It's the most epic contemporary epic, romance normal
contemporary
ever.
Romance.
Get ready.
That takes place in like two cities. Doesn't go anywhere. So thank you, Haley, for that question. So moving into her last question, which is, Who is your all-time celebrity crush?
That's like the biggest question.
I love how we say this all the time as if we like don't have a podcast that is based on answering questions. We're always like, how could we possibly answer this question when it just comes to like our favorite character or our favorite moment? It's like, how could we possibly do that? I'm going to explain though why this is a hard question.
Okay.
And maybe you'll agree with me in terms of why it's hard for you.
Please do.
I feel like when it comes to celebrity crushes, I fixate on actors or singers or whatever, but usually just actors in a specific show or movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like who they are as their character and what they look like as their character and not them. Like I'm not someone that I go and like if I have a celebrity crush, I'll watch like all of their interviews, all of that stuff. Like I like watching actor interviews in general, but I don't actively go and seek them out as much as you do.
I mean, it was my job when I worked in casting.
Yeah.
But I do occasionally do that in my free time as well.
But I feel like how we just watched Masters of the Air, which
you guys,
if anyone is looking for a show rec, we loved Masters of the Air.
What a cast.
What a cast.
Show. What a story. What performances.
And on that show, I am obsessed with Callum Turner.
And Nate Mann.
And Nate Mann.
Yeah.
However, I wasn't seeking some stuff out where like you downloaded the podcast, you were watching the interviews.
Oh, yeah.
Like you tend to, if we're kind of getting into something with actors that we love, you'll go seek out more content. I don't do that as much. So I'm really kind of like living in just who they are as their character. So with celebrity crushes, there are definitely actors that like, oh, if I see that they're going to be in something, I want to go see it. And like, I have a big fat crush on them, but I am not like a hyper fixated celebrity crush kind of gal.
Yeah. And I mean, again, I worked in casting, but I really started following actors in general because actors for me are a really big inspiration point for writing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, like if you're writing a script, someone's going to have to play the parts. And certain people and their performances are just such incredible proof of what people are capable of doing in terms of storytelling. So,
yeah.
Like using Masters of the Air as an example, I really wanted to watch that show. It came to my attention because I love Anthony Boyle. And so for me, I kind of get into shows because I follow an actor into it.
Yeah.
And then then you arrive at shows like Masters of the Air. It's like, oh my God, Callum Turner and Nate Mann. Nate Mann, who I've never seen in anything before,
yeah,
blew me away. And so,
and we watched a show.
And we watched the other show that he was
Nate
in.
Nate Mann is in that show. So we do like follow actors,
yeah,
a bit that way.
I know that this is true for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But that's just kind of how my brain works, where I really love someone's performance, their energy. I find it exciting and I just follow them into projects. Man, Masters of the Air. I could make an
We're
argument.
Like still recovering from the experience of all those attractive men.
Yeah.
Well, let's actually answer the question.
Okay.
Do you have a clear answer to this question?
I don't think so, but I can give a couple that maybe if you connect them, it equals like the span of my life, if that makes sense.
Okay, so some serious crushes over your lifespan.
Yeah. So okay. I'll give you three.
Okay.
I'll keep it simple. I've had a lot of crushes.
Yeah.
And if I got into all of them, it would be chaos and we would be here for 5 hours.
Just like I find something good in every book, I find a crush in every story.
Absolutely. You should have seen us watching Narcos. That was...
Oh my God, that was sickness.
That was a free-for-all.
Pedro Pascal in Narcos gave me life.
Yeah. I have a crush on him in pretty much everything. But if we are looking at bigger chunks of time, this is overall crush. This is all-time crush. For me, probably up until I was maybe 14 or 15, it was Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Christian,
you were a Christian Bale girly.
Christian Bale specifically in Little Women. Him as Lori is everything. And I also loved him in Newsies and some other things that he was in, but that was the role. If I had
to pinpoint
one.
That's a good one. Christian Bale is solid.
And I still love him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hold the same feeling towards him.
Because you're an adult woman.
Because I'm an adult woman. After that, it was definitely Gerard Butler.
Yes, the Gerard Butler phase was also very real. I feel like he was on, if you did like a vision board, I have this like memory of you having a vision board or something like that, or just a collage board.
Yeah.
And Gerard Butler was on
it. He was probably on it. And I'm going to pinpoint the role that if I could only pick one that represents the love and the attraction, even though this is not the best movie.
Can I guess what it is? Is it Timeline?
It's Timeline. It is Gerard Butler in Timeline. excellent. And he's been in other films. He's given better performances. This movie is wackadoo. But
we love this movie.
Him in that, the look, the fact that he's a historian. He loves sword fighting. He's like action-oriented. He's romantic. Everything.
Yeah.
And then I think probably after that, more recently, maybe within the last 10-ish years, I really love Joel Edgerton. Mm-hmm. Like, he really does it for me. And I love him on screen. He's also a writer, but he's someone that I am really drawn towards. Mm-hmm. So I think between the three of them, maybe that answers the question. Because I don't have one that kind of conquers all. And there's a million other ones in there, too. What about you?
This was really hard because, like you, I've gone through phases of just having crushes. But I don't know if anyone's really like outlasted the others, but I'll do something similar to you. I mean, right now, and this has been holding on to me probably for a couple years now, and I haven't even seen him in that many things, but we watched him in the show based off a true story, which is also about a podcast, but we watched this man and I was feral. And now when I picture love interests in book series, I picture him. I pictured him as the Duke when we read The Duke and I. Mm-hmm. He's kind of like how people picture Henry Cavill. As everyone, I'm starting to do that a bit with him, and it's Tom Bateman.
I think this is so funny because I feel like for the last few years, when you're like, I'm trying to think of someone I can picture for like my book or whatever the thing is, I've been like, what about Tom Bateman? You saw a picture, you're like, I don't know. And then you watch the show. And everything changed.
Because he's one of those guys that in person, LOL, on screen, his energy is just so undeniable to me. Where if you just look up a picture of him, it's like when you're dating someone and you like show show your friends a picture of him and you're like, I swear he's cuter. Even though he's very handsome in photos as well. But his energy specifically is based off a true story. And I won't spoil the plot of that. But kind of unhinged of me to love him in that. It's just undeniable. And I'm obsessed with him in that way. Like, I love him. And he's like 6'5". He is my stand-in. In my head. And like when I think about like, oh, what's the kind of guy I want to end up with? His look and just that. And again, I haven't looked up interviews. I don't really know what he's like at all, but I am kind of fixated on him in that way.
Yeah.
So that's definitely one that's been like very solid for me the last couple years. Mm-hmm. And I will give a couple more. And I feel like some of these are silly. Well, not silly, but I think they might be unexpected. One of them is Matthew Good.
Oh, yes.
Love Matthew Good.
And Matthew Good is in everything. It's Matthew a joke Good now.
Is in everything. For those of you who don't know who Matthew Good is, he plays Mary's guy on Downton Abbey. He plays Henry. He is the love interest in Leap Year. He's the love interest in the Discovery of Witches show. He just works a lot. I love his energy.
Yeah.
If I see he's in something, I'll go watch it.
And he's in everything.
He works a lot. We were just talking about how on Downton Abbey, like, he was the perfect cast for that character because he doesn't have that much time to do anything. And his character isn't even that fleshed out. But because it's Matthew Good, he just brings like a sparkle and a richness that I just can't deny. Very into it.
Nor should you.
Nor should I. So definitely have a big fat crush on Matthew Good. And a new one I've developed, and I guess it isn't even new because it's been years now, but Toby Stevens.
Okay, I feel like Toby Stevens also needs to make it on my list because, my God.
But specifically him on the show Black Sails, that's what awoke it in me. And Black Sails in general, ooh, all of the men.
All of them.
One of the characters who plays the governor. That is like the crush I have in life that I would think someone could look at and be like, you need to go to therapy. That's like my therapy crush. That you need help crush is the governor. But Toby Stevens is also on Black Sails. And for those of you who don't know, this is a pirate show.
Yes.
So Toby Stevens on that show awoke something in me. And for those of you who don't know, he's also Maggie Smith's son. He's my favorite Nepo baby.
Yeah. And he's been in a million like BBC dramas and all that. He's played Rochester.
Yeah. We just watched his version of Rochester.
He's been in And Then There Were None.
Yeah, also, And Then There Were None, solid.
And he's been in like big James Bond films and all that.
Speaking of And Then There Were None, Aidan Turner. That would actually be, I've been like low-key in love with him for probably at least 10 years. Started on Poldark, as crazy as that show is, but him in And Then There Were None, done for.
Yeah.
Lay me in my grave, I'm done.
Yeah, and I mean, I really love that Toby Stevens is one that the two of us and our mother, like, we all love. This is a family affair.
It's a shared crush.
We just really adore him.
We do. But yeah, I think those are the ones that, like, currently I think about more mm-hmm. and have been top of brain for at least a couple years.
Well, I'm going to ask a question that's related to this. So who was your first crush? Like, your first one?
Animated or real?
Either. Whoever came first.
I think maybe Teenage Simba for like the 3 seconds he's in Hakuna Matata.
That's all it takes.
That's all it took. It wasn't adult Simba and it wasn't little baby Simba. It was teenage Simba. I would like to follow that up with Liam Neeson as the voice of Aslan.
She's a lion girl.
This is something Megan and I have discussed that I also might need help for. That's something about a lion.
Have you watched Lion King 2, Simba's Pride, and checked out Kovu?
And yeah, I had a crush on Kovu. He was like the morally gray, dark version of my lion crush. I'm not sorry about it.
No.
I mean, my first like people-based animated crush would have been Prince Eric. I was a Prince Eric girl, which also explains my Dorian Havilliard pipeline.
It's the ascension.
It's the ascension through the crush. And I think my first real person crush was Donny Osmond in Joseph.
We love Donny.
Donny Osmond in Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat was a staple movie in our household growing up. That's like we watch it still like twice a year.
Yeah.
Probably.
Because it's pure joy.
It's pure joy. We love the music. We know all the words. But there's a scene where it's not going so good for good old Joseph. And he gets dropped into jail. He splats into jail and they took a lot of his clothing and he is shirtless and he's in his little man skirt. He has his long hair, mm-hmm. his long, I call it Jesus hair,
yep.
but he is Joseph. Different Bible story. And him singing my favorite song from that show. It was a little confusing for me as a 4-year-old.
Sure. I think it still is.
I think it still is. Am I right, ladies?
I think many a woman has had a crush on Donny Osmond.
So I think that was like my first child crush in those ways. What about you?
I mean, on the note of crushing on someone who's in a movie for a matter of minutes, this isn't my first one, but I want to shout out to Sean Bean in the Black Beauty movie.
I still have a crush on Sean Bean.
Oh, yeah, I do too. But like, it started for me because he is the one that owns Black Beauty's mother and he helps deliver Black Beauty into the world. And it's just a sequence of Black Beauty getting older and having to put the bit in the mouth and the saddle on and he rides him and then he leaves Sean Bean in the farm. And that's it.
Yeah.
But my God, that really did something for me as a child.
What about a National Treasure? Does he do something for you there?
He does something for me all the
when
time.
When he's trying to steal the Declaration of Independence.
Yes. Okay, talk about wanting to watch a movie because an actor's in it. That's why I watched National Treasure. Because Sean Bean was in it with weird bleached hair.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I was there for that. But for me, without a doubt, my first ever crush, and I stand by this, I still think he needs more attention in the Disney realm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Robin Hood girl. I mean,
Megan loves a fox.
He's foxy.
That's why she loves Lucian.
He is a fox. He loves Maid Marian. It is an uncomplicated kind of love. He just wants to marry her and live in happiness and contentment.
He has excellent riz.
He's everything. He has it all. So I still stand by that I think he is one of the better Disney men to have a crush on.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm biased. And I think the first, maybe more mature crush that I remember having was Guy Patterson in That Thing You Do.
Mm-hmm.
So that was right before I was hitting double digits.
Yeah.
But he was a big crush for me in that movie.
Yeah, I think my more appropriate age, even though these men are probably 20 years older than me at the time. Well, still would be.
No, just at the time.
Just at the time. We're the same age now. They're eligible for me. I can go date them now. My first more like mature crushes mm-hmm. because they come together. Phantom of the Opera, Patrick Wilson, and Gerard Butler.
We gotta mention Patrick Wilson.
You know, like Patrick Wilson would actually maybe be up there for an all-time crush.
Patrick Wilson is the reason I watched Aquaman. And I love Jason Momoa. Look. Jason Momoa, he's a fine man.
He's the only reason that when I rewatch Girls, I will still watch that episode because I don't care about that episode at all, but he's in it.
he's usually not the type that I'm attracted to.
Yeah,
he's kind of looks like the all-American. I mean, he looks like the original Aquaman in the comics.
Yeah, he does.
And that's just usually not the type of guy that I'm attracted to, but he's got it.
Yeah, and Gerard Butler. Even when his mask gets pulled off, I'm like, why
it's not that
is
bad.
Everyone making a big deal about this? I thought that as like, what, like a 9-year-old? I was like, why is everyone being weird about his face? He's so hot. I was like, you guys are prejudiced and disgusting, and I'll have him. So what if he's murdered people? So what if he's the devil, Rick? At least he's active in the community. At least he has a job.
This whole opera house relies on his talent.
Have you seen his home? How he designed his home? He has an excellent touch for design. Honestly, besides the murder and the obsession with an underage girl.
Besides that.
Besides that. What's the problem? This is why, like, all of my crushes just, like, show that I need to go see someone.
I mean, I really do love the TikTok trend that I feel like just kind of came to a close where everyone was sharing their unhinged crushes from their childhood.
Yeah.
That was my favorite thing to see. It's like Tim Curry in the movie Legend where he looks like Satan. I mean, Tim Curry in a lot of things, actually.
Yeah, just Tim Curry.
I mean, I'm probably guilty of that as well. Him in Rocky Horror was confusing for me. Him and everything is confusing.
Him and everything is confusing. But yeah, those are a lot of our crushes. Not to mention like Adam Driver, ooh, Alexander Skarsgård, James McAvoy.
We love a McAvoy.
We love a McAvoy.
We also love the grandpa on Derry Girls.
Megan and I are always like, oh my God, he's like really handsome. Thank you, Haley, for sending us down that rabbit hole. Hopefully we kind of answered your question.
You guys just get to listen to us become more and more unhinged when we talk about ourselves and our personal lives. You're welcome, and we're sorry.
Well, next up, we have a question from our mommy.
Because we couldn't say no to that.
She knew we were doing this episode, and she asks us, if you were to go on a vacation for a week and could only bring one book, what would it be?
And I want to mention, because she asked this question in the same breath as talking about that when I first started traveling alone with my backpacking backpack, that I brought 2 giant Harry Potter books with me.
Yeah.
You know, in the small space that you have to put your limited clothing and toiletries. I packed 2 giant Harry Potter books, and I don't regret it, because taking those with me was the most wonderful, relaxing thing to do in my downtime. And I think that just really shows the power of bringing comfort books with you, even when it's extremely inconvenient.
Yeah.
So for you, do you have one?
I mean, I never travel with a book because, first of all, space.
Sure.
Second of all, I think if I have a book, I'm going to want to read and not go outside and be on vacation or like do the things. However, if I was going on an extended vacation, kind of like what we're doing now, if I had had the space to bring a book, I think it would depend on where we're going. If we're going somewhere like where we are in the UK, I would bring A Court of Mist and Fury. I think that is just a comfort book for me. But if I was going somewhere where I wanted kind of just, it's like not even a lighter read, but just something that isn't a giant book, a part of a series, I would bring Beach Read by Emily Henry.
Okay.
That is a massive comfort contemporary romance for me. I've read that a couple times. It's one that I will continue to reread. I'm a big Gus girl. So yeah, I think those two.
Okay. I mean, I think one that I will probably have to mention, because I have read it a couple times while traveling, especially in Yorkshire, is Jane Eyre. I really love reading a Bronte when I'm in Yorkshire, and because I've read it numerous times, I kind of like reading it and going in with a fresh mindset and trying to picture like a new fresh version of it. It's like a new production mentally when I read it, and I just really love the story and all of that. And maybe that's an odd comfort book, because I don't really reread that many books, but I'm a gothic kind of girl when it comes to reading, and I just love the Brontes in general, but I just love the setting and the atmosphere and the mystery. I love all the things that are associated with Jane Eyre.
Yeah.
So I think for me, that would be at the top.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I think One Dark Window would maybe make that list now that we're rereading it here, because I never really had the experience of reading on vacation for the reasons I said. Reading it here where it's been cloudy and talk about like the mists and everything in the book, I think having a read that feels like it's in alignment with your current setting, that is always fun. And I feel like One Dark Window could be my new UK read.
Yeah, I'm really excited to actually reread Two Twisted Crowns, because I know that once we do One Dark Window,
I'm gonna have to read the next one.
So yeah, I think I'd put that on the list as well. Yeah, I'm just not a big like rereader, but I think more of the books that I've been reading lately, I think I could actually apply that to, as well as, I'm gonna missay it because I can never get this title out, but The Secret Society of Irregular Witches.
Yes.
That is one that I would really like to reread, because that was a big comfort read.
I love that. I love that for you. So thanks, Mommy.
Thank you, Mama.
Mom, do you feel like you know us better now? We have to ban our mom from some of our episodes because of content.
Like silver flames.
But you're welcome here today, Mommy. So our next question is another one from our listener, Liv, and she asks, what are your comfort movies? Oh boy, Liv, did you just open up a can of worms? Because we take our movies and our shows very seriously. Very seriously. If you couldn't tell by like kind of how we've been talking about other questions, this is a very serious thing.
We were a really fun movie household. We're also a household where we did tend to rewatch some movies that we really latched onto quite frequently.
You might not be a rereader, but you are a rewatcher.
I'm definitely a rewatcher. I mean, I wish you lovely listeners could see the list on my computer when we saw this question come over. It's a big list.
Megan took it very seriously.
I also have comfort shows.
Yeah. So I think we also need to talk about our comfort shows, because I think we watch our comfort shows more frequently sometimes than comfort movies.
Yeah, because there's more content too. And I also, just going back to what we were talking about earlier, I have comfort cast ensembles that kind of drive why I want to watch a show. So I feel like Masters of the Air is my newest one.
Yeah.
Being in that environment, despite how dramatic and harrowing it is, it feels good to sit down and watch it, because I really just love their characters and their performances and the energy of that show. And I think some of my comfort choices are actually maybe not so comfortable sounding, but that's probably the best example of a new one.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should go back and forth, because I feel like some of these will be the same because we share the same household.
Yes.
And therefore
we grew up watching the same things
same things over and over, so we can go back and forth and then we can say if we agree with that movie.
Okay.
For me, starting off, this is I think number one in terms of, this is one of my favorite comfort movies, but also I think this is genuinely one of my favorite movies, if not my favorite movie of all time. Stardust.
Yes, 100%.
If you guys are romantasy girlies and you haven't seen this movie, I don't know what you're doing.
Mark Strong in this movie is one of my favorite things ever.
Absolutely.
And I'm a Claire Danes girl. I grew up loving her. I mean, all of the elements. Everyone in it, the fantasy, the romance, the action, it not taking itself too seriously. I feel like I kind of relate it to The Princess Bride a little bit because there's the humor to it.
Just has a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
It's like it just delivers everything, as well as it has a flashback with Ben Barnes. It has Henry Cavill, who you would never know is Henry Cavill because he is blonde in it and has blonde facial hair. There is adventure. There's magic. It's filmed on the Isle of Skye in Scotland, which is just so magical. It just has all the things. And then it's really funny with Mark Strong and the brothers.
Oh, yes.
So if you haven't seen it, that is a movie that I will recommend to anyone who loves romantasy.
Another one that I think we have to mention, because we might have touched on this before on the podcast, but Death on the Nile.
Yes.
Is a big one. And we're not talking about the new one with Gal Gadot.
With Tom Bateman.
We are talking...
Ironically enough, that is not the version that I glom onto.
We are talking about the version with Maggie Smith and Bette Davis. That film is one that we have watched probably at least 1 billion times. We quote it all the time.
Maybe 1 trillion times.
And that is always a fun one because it is unhinged to put on, reenact, and just like go back into that space. And we love a murder mystery as well.
Yeah, I agree. That is one of, again, it's like a lot of these comfort movies are also just like my favorite movies. Like I will watch them anytime.
Yeah.
I think that to me is what a comfort movie is something that of course you can put on when you're like, oh, I just need to like sit down and like hunker down into something. But also I could just watch this at any time.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Death on the Nile, 1970s version.
Here for it always.
Here for it always. My next one is Center Stage.
Mm-hmm.
Love a dance movie.
Love a Cooper Nielsen, even though he's an ass.
I just love that movie. It has Zoe Saldana back before she got like really big. If you love ballet, you love drama, you love a good big dance scene at the end. And mind you, this is ballet. This isn't like Step Up or anything crazy like that. But I adore this movie.
Yeah, that is definitely one that's always fun to put on and to quote as well. We love
Megan
the dance
and I,
movie.
Like 80% of our communication with one another is just movie quotes.
We speak in film. I'm pretty confident that you would also put Miracle
100%
on your list.
I used to get so mad as a kid because our school, one of the go-to movies that they would put on movie day, it's like the, why are we even watching this? This has nothing to do with anything mm-hmm. movie that teachers just put on when they're tired.
It's Remember the Titans.
Was Remember the Titans, which I feel like this was a movie for a lot of schools that did that. But Miracle is about the 1980 American hockey team in the Olympics beating Russia. It was a very big deal because of the Cold War, true story, all that. But it's a sports movie. And I'm like, this is a good sports movie. It has Kurt Russell and it's just a cast of young, good looking hockey guys.
I could also argue that Kurt Russell could be on the all-time crush list. He's definitely up there through every period in his life.
Yeah.
He's still got it.
He still looks amazing. That's what happens when you're good on the inside.
Yeah, but no, for me, that is definitely one of the top ones. Again, I don't want to keep going back to Masters of the Air, but I really do love a TV show or a movie that it's kind of like a boys' movie. There is something relaxing watching stories like that to me. And I think Miracle is a really good example of, I just love being with all of those boys. The hockey, the way that it's shot is fantastic.
Yeah, because they all actually played.
And the way that the camera work is, you really feel like you're on the ice and they're recreating all of the actual plays that happened in all of the games. Like the attention to detail is wonderful. And the story, the true story, as well as how it's portrayed in the film, is so feel good. And it's just good. It's just a great movie.
It's feel good. My next one, which I've mentioned, is Phantom of the Opera. I think this is the thing that as a kid, I loved musicals, but I think this was my entry into more adult musicals because we watched Joseph and obviously like all of the Disney movies are musicals and all of that. But Phantom was just like world shaking to me. It rocked my world. It just changed something in my child brain. Like my chemistry was just altered seeing that movie.
Well, and that's so funny because for me, that's how I felt when I was 5 and our parents took me to see Phantom of the Opera on stage for the first time.
Yeah.
That shifted something in me. I think that was one of the big like, oh, I want to be involved with something like this kind of moments and seeing like literally it's that gothic-esque aesthetic that I love and is so rooted in my brain.
It's just so beautifully haunting, like the music, like aesthetic aside, just like the music of Phantom. Yeah. Phantom just changed my life in that way in terms of like what I want from entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
So massive comfort movie for me. I will always put on Phantom, that version or the Ramin and Sierra version. That is the, is it the 25th anniversary?
I think it's the 25th, yeah.
Version that's recorded live. Either of those, but I do love the movie, I will say.
Well, kind of on the note of a darker aesthetic, one that I know is true for you as well is Adam's Family Values.
Oh, yeah.
Queen,
absolutely.
Joan Cusack, and Angelica Houston. Idols to us all. Really anything with Joan Cusack. Talk about like a comfort performer.
Yeah.
It's her. I just love that movie.
I mean, I have one that I think like every woman ever would label as a comfort movie, which is the 2005 Pride and Prejudice.
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel like Pride and Prejudice, that version specifically, and I know some people are really loyal to the BBC like 8-hour miniseries.
And I haven't seen that one.
I love
Colin Firth,
either.
But
I really need to do that because we do love Colin.
We love Colin.
So maybe we should put that on our list of things to
do. You know what? I love the 2005 Pride and Prejudice. I love everything about it. The music, the romance, the way that they interpreted the romance.
Mm-hmm. I love their version of Darcy.
The iconic hand stretch moment. I think it just whoever made it got it. They understood what us ladies want out of a romantic movie.
I know that you, I don't think I've seen this one, but I would put the Sense and Sensibility with Emma Thompson and Kate Winslet on a similar platform. The music, the cast, just the way that that story was told, I would also count that as a comfort movie.
So yeah, those are a lot of our comfort movies. We have a lot more. are, but we will spend hours talking about all of our comfort movies and all of the reasons we love them. And because we can't just let it go yet, we have to list some of our comfort shows.
Do you want to maybe just list yours and then maybe I'll list mine?
Okay. The White Queen.
Yep.
Downton Abbey.
Yes.
Black Sails.
Black Sails is
everything.
Is everything.
Maybe top favorite show.
Yeah.
Outlander.
I'm 50-50 on that one. I love Outlander. I love the cast. I love the world, but it's not always a comfort show for me because of the content.
And for me, it's like the first three seasons. Yes, and it is very dark content.
But also in the first three seasons, I think some of the darkest content is specifically with Blackjack.
I just love being in Scotland.
I know.
It, like, the setting is comforting to me.
Yeah, and it's like, I love Tobias Menzies. He's he's on the list as well. At times it's comforting. At other times it stresses me out.
Oh no, it's very, very dark.
So that's why I would answer that way.
Sex in the City.
I enjoy it, but that's probably not a comfort one for me.
Bridgerton.
Yes.
Vikings Valhalla, season 1 specifically.
Season 1, yes.
Season 1. That also changed my brain chemistry. Talk about a show where I'm like, oh my God, all of the male leads I have a crush on.
All of them.
Every single one. But those were just ones that came to mind first. Do you have a list?
Yes, I have some. I know that you haven't seen some of these, or you probably wouldn't agree with some of these, but Fleabag.
Yes, of course.
Dairy Girls.
Yes.
Masters of the Air for me is now a comfort show.
I love Masters of the Air. It might be on the line of a comfort show for me. I think I would need to watch it again. I think for me, a comfort show needs to be something that I've watched multiple times. And I feel like I can, first of all, watch it multiple times and then also bring the comfort. I was very comforted watching it. I loved watching it. But I think I need to give it more of a test run before I can firmly put it on my list.
So this, I think, is the perfect way to open the door to what I oftentimes consider comforting, and that is a historical drama.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it is a drama in every sense of the word, that usually there's some heavier content.
You saying that while saying Outlander couldn't be comforting, I feel like kettle is calling pot right now.
But it's the specific stuff that Blackjack does that
I have
a difficult time watching.
I skip that episode. If you guys know what I'm talking about, I skip it.
The examples that I'm going to give, because I don't think that these would ever register as comfort shows, but I've watched them a million times. And so I know these shows inside and out. So when I put them on, it's just a different experience for me. And it just is what it is. So for me, that would be like The Sopranos, Deadwood, Boardwalk Empire, The Terror. And this isn't quite as intense, but I also really like Wolf Hall. Wolf Hall is a really comforting show for me.
Yeah. And out of those, I've only seen The Terror, and I would not classify that as a comfort show for me.
No, but I personally,
I can't even tell them apart with their time period facial hair that covers most of their faces in the most ridiculous ways.
And I know all of them.
And you know all of them because you know the actors already.
I just really like being in that, like, either historical space that is obviously rooted in something that's happened in the past, or like with The Sopranos, that's a world that I'm just not part of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a lot of humor in it. It's very dark, but my brain likes floating around in those spaces. Obviously, we love shows like The Office and Psych and New Girl and Parks and Rec and Gilmore Girls and things like that. Mm-hmm. So we have a bunch of those shows that we will put on rewatch, like while we're doing things or just relaxing. But I think if we wanted to maybe just go into some more detail, those are probably our list
of
what we consider comfort shows.
So thank you, Liv, for that question and for, again, letting us go down that rabbit hole, because it's a rabbit hole we love to live in. And our last listener question of this episode comes from Lauren, who is going on our Scotland fantasy tour with us. When this episode comes out, we will be with Lauren. So Lauren asks, what is one of your favorite sister moments you two have shared together?
I mean, you and I travel a lot, and I feel like we've had some really great moments abroad. When I saw this question, isn't sentimental at all. It just made me laugh, because the first thing that came to my mind was when you and I were in Iceland and we were at a restaurant, and you asked the man what the dessert behind the counter was, and he talked to you like you didn't know what a cake was.
Yes. So we were in Iceland, and we did a lovely road trip around, and everywhere I was going, I was seeing that they had, it was a cake, but it was a three-layered cake, and it had whipped cream and mixed fruits, and it looked like it had meringue or something.
Three-tiered.
It was three-tiered. There was a lot going on, and I didn't know what it was. I was just seeing it everywhere. So I'm thinking, okay, is this something that's more traditional? traditional to Iceland? Is this just something that like modern Icelandic culture has adopted that they just really love? Whatever. So I look at this man who we are paying because we're eating here, let alone we're staying at this accommodation. And I ask him, what is that?
Meaning, what is that called?
It's not a Victoria sponge, but like how cakes have names. A Victoria sponge, Black Forest.
Even an ice cream cake technically has a name.
Even an ice cream cake has been given a Christian name. I'm looking for the terms that would be used on the Great British Baking Show. Mm-hmm. But this man, dead ass, looks me in the eyes, has a heavy pause, and says, it's a cake.
It's the kind of thing that you eat and make for celebrations, birthdays. Like, he went into the description of when you would eat such a thing.
And what it is.
As
if I was so uncultured that I couldn't possibly know what a cake is.
I know that that doesn't sound like the best sister moment, but I feel like our travels have been made up of so many like random little things like that, mm-hmm. that really just contribute to our life experience as sisters together. Yeah. But maybe on a more sentimental note and a more recent note, I have to say that us almost immediately booking out our Scotland fantasy tour, mm-hmm. was a really big moment to experience together,
yeah.
to build something together and to be able to share that.
It's like a lot of families, I think, share this of, wouldn't it be nice if we had success together? It's yeah. like, wouldn't it be cool if we could do something together, whether it's a business or, you know, whatever, that I think that's just something we've always talked about. It's like, wouldn't it be cool if we could just like do something together? Like, my success can be your success and yeah. vice versa. And yeah, being able to have that moment where it's like, oh, we've done it.
And this is a passion of both of ours.
Yeah.
This means something on every single level mm-hmm. of our life, of doing a literary tour, going to Scotland, traveling together, being with other women, like forming connections, integrating the things that you and I have learned and teach as clinical hypnotherapists, mm-hmm. really combining all of the work that we've both shared into something that makes us so incredibly happy. Mm-hmm. And like you said, doing that together, that was definitely, I think, a big moment.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, I have one that was also on our Iceland trip. I feel like I have to tell a little bit of this story.
Okay.
Because
I don't know what story this is.
It was the night that you and I saw the Northern Lights.
Okay.
So we'd been on this road trip for probably a week, a little over a week at this point. Wonderful road trip, having the time of our lives. And one day I'm in the car and I'm just like getting this terrible headache. I don't usually suddenly take ill, but I did. So we decided to go to our new accommodation early. We go there. We pull up to this house, and it looks like it is out of a horror film.
It was not represented well in the photos or the description.
It was not. So we had this blessing of a moment where you were able to book at the next accommodation for the next night, that mm-hmm. we would just go there that night. So have two back-to-back nights in the same beautiful accommodation. And as we're leaving, the host pulls up, and again, a woman out of a horror film, if there ever was one, like
yep.
Children of the Corn movie moment, where we are on the road, this long road in the middle of nowhere. It was horrific. Moment of going down this dirt road, passing her as she pulls up. And it's like in Twilight when Edward passes Billy and they like slow and they stare at each other and there's hate going back and forth.
Because she made me roll down the window. She stopped her car next to us, rolled down her window, and like I don't have to do anything, but in polite society, one would also roll down the window to hear what the woman was going to say. And she asked if we were staying there that night.
Nope.
I don't lie very often, but that was a big lie that I was happy to tell.
That was a lie for our lives.
Yes.
At that point. So luckily we got out of there. I just like remember it in the most horrific, dramatic way. And of course, as soon as we pull out, my headache's gone. I'm feeling great. I have all this energy. I swear to God, source, universe, energy interfered, divine intervention, and gave me a headache.
Yeah.
So that we would go and see it and be able to undo it before we were stuck there for the night.
And
it ended up being the best thing. amazing because we went to this cabin, this tiny, tiny cabin, grass roof, the whole thing. And we were able to see the Northern Lights that night. But it's such a fond memory because it was so cold. It was so cold that, of course, you want to be outside watching the Northern Lights and you're kind of waiting for it. There's this period of time. It's not just there as soon as it gets dark, obviously. So we had music on. I feel like I remember this, that we were playing music and we would run outside wrapped in a million blankets, stand there for like 60 seconds and be like, okay, it's not here yet. And then run inside, get warm again. And we were doing that like circuit of outside, okay, not here yet. Inside, get warm. Look out the window. Oh, I can't even see anything out the window. And back and forth, back and forth, back and forth for probably like an hour and a half. And then we finally saw it. And it was just so lovely because we were freezing, but it was just such a joyful moment to see the Northern Lights, which is obviously such a special experience. And like a lot of people just don't ever get to experience that in their lifetime.
And that's been a bucket list item, I know, for me and for you as well.
Yeah, that I think that was a very fond memory. And just like the silliness of us like laughing as we're going in. And it's like, okay, your turn. You go out. You go out and look because I'm freezing.
We just have fun with that stuff. You have to laugh at life. But yeah, that was definitely a really great moment. And what a stunning sky, despite the frigid cold. And I don't get cold easily, and I was freezing my ass off.
That was the coldest I've ever been in my entire life. So I think that's definitely a big one. I'll name two quick ones as well, because it's nice.
It is nice.
Since we mentioned Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat, I think I look back on my childhood and think of our nights watching that movie with such fondness of like dancing and singing and just having so much fun. I love that.
I do too.
That's a very fond part of my childhood. And also a more specific moment is when, maybe you can remember how old I was better, is when you took me to Disneyland, because it was my birthday and I don't know what you told me. You told
me. Did I lie?
You lied to me. It was for the greater good though, so it was fine. But you told me, I think that we were going to go to LA. You were probably living in LA at this time and had come down for my birthday. But you told me we were going to go up to LA and do whatever. And to me, I'm like, yeah, that sounds fun. Like, I was still young, but I was like, going to LA, that sounds like a fun birthday. And then you exited the freeway and you're like,
I do remember this now.
You're like, oh, I wasn't supposed to get off here. And I was like, okay, like, what do we do? Like, can you just turn around? And you're like, oh, there's the Disneyland sign. And I was like, okay. And you're like, well, we might as well just go to Disneyland then. That she had planned this whole Disneyland day, but tricked me. And it was a surprise.
Gotcha.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that was a really fun day. I do like doing a surprise. I'm iffy on receiving.
She will lie for a surprise.
Receiving surprises. It kind of depends. But I do love pulling an old switcheroo for the greater good.
And that was a really fun day.
That's definitely a good one. So thank you, Lauren, for asking that,
nice.
That question.
Walking that was so down memory nice. Lane.
And like we do, maybe more so in our Patreon episodes, we are going to end this episode with a segment that we call Laugh, Cry, Barf. So we are going to share something that makes us laugh, something that makes us cry, and something that makes us want to either physically or emotionally barf. Would you like to go first?
No, I want you to go first.
Okay. So my laugh.
Just something in life that makes you laugh.
The first thing that came to mind, I don't know if this is like something in life because this is a person. Actually, this is two people.
Oh, that's fine. It could be anything.
Conan O'Brien and Bill Hader consistently make me laugh.
That is such a good one.
And I really mean like Conan O'Brien in every meeting because I just love his sense of humor. And when the two of them, when Bill Hader and Conan O'Brien come together, it is my favorite thing to listen to on a podcast, to watch. Bill Hader is so infectious with his humor that like I could be having a horrible day and just putting him on and being around that in some capacity makes me feel better. So I would probably have to say the two of them because that was the first thing that came to mind. Granted, I was just listening to Conan's podcast.
I might have to steal that because them doing Conan's Clueless Gamer
is the best.
So amazing.
And for me, I don't even know if you can find this anymore, but Conan O'Brien did a special where he went to Finland years ago. That is one of my favorite things. Just Conan O'Brien like in the wild and watching Bill Hader in recent years has just like added on top of that.
That's a great one. Okay, what's something that makes you cry?
I feel like Jude Law in The Holiday saying this, but something that makes me cry is a good film score. Let me tell you something. On my bucket list, I have that I want, nay need, to go see Hans Zimmer in concert. And when I go, I'm going to weep because music, maybe it's because I'm a Pisces or whatever reason, it just hits me in a spot, especially film scores. And I think it's because it's written in a way that is supposed to ignite your emotion and all of that. But for so many reasons, a good film score that hits the right notes with me will never cease to make me cry. And I will go see Hans someday. I'm manifesting it right now.
I'm gonna go see Hans so hard.
I'm gonna go see him so hard. It's gonna be the best night of my life.
Okay, then what is something that makes you barf?
So this is probably more on a physical level. This isn't an emotional barf, but it's a texture and a smell thing.
Oh, ew.
Yeah.
I mean, just you saying the word texture and smell together, that doesn't sit well with me.
And there's no hate to anyone that enjoys these things, because I know that you enjoy these things.
I swear to God. Are you about to say pickles?
No.
Okay.
No, I can handle pickles. I don't love the smell of pickles.
Megan is a little biased against me and my pickles.
But for me, I can't stand the smell or texture of sauerkraut and potato salad.
So sauerkraut is basically cabbage pickles.
I know. And that one is probably the less of the two evils.
Mm-hmm.
Potato salad, that the kind mayonnaise. Of food, and it's cold.
It's mayonnaise-based foods.
And I don't like hate mayonnaise or anything, but for whatever reason, that I just can't. I just cannot do what you will with that information.
Man, I didn't know my sauerkraut was so triggering to you.
It's fine if other people eat it. I just don't want to eat it.
That's okay. So I will make you, even though sometimes I do try to make you.
You do. Okay. Your turn.
Okay.
What is something that makes you laugh, something that makes you cry, and something that makes you want to barf?
I feel like the laugh was the hardest thing, because I laugh at stuff all the time, but I could not think of something for the life of me. I think the Conan O'Brien and Bill Hader duo, that is solid. But the first thing that came to mind was, like, we're getting deep into YouTube now, is Cody Ko and his friend Noel do a segment called That's Cringe on YouTube. And there's a specific episode where they tackle girl defined. And I'm not even going to explain what that is. You can look it up if you want to.
Mr. Struggle.
That always makes me laugh. And I don't go looking up like that kind of YouTube content very often, but like that came out when like YouTube was a bigger thing. And I will every once in a while go and watch that. And it always makes me laugh, just them doing that. I'm like, that's my version of kind of like entertainment podcast listening, them doing commentary on that. And I think growing up, because I loved Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah. Mystery Science Theater would be up there for me for sure. That was actually the other thing that popped into my brain.
Yeah.
The original
Mystery Science Theater.
I like Mike as the host the best.
So that definitely makes me laugh. Something that makes me cry, and this is not in a jolly way, is animal movies. I actually refuse to watch animal movies because they always get hurt or they die. And even when they're okay, they, like I said, they get hurt.
There's always a moment where it gets iffy.
There's always that. And I can't handle it. It upsets me to such a deep degree. Like, I will blubber. I just can't do it. Megan and I watched the John Wick series. Probably like 8 months ago or so. And my parents know this, and they said something about, you know, there's a dog in it. And I asked our mom, you're listening, and I blame you for this. I asked, is it okay? Like, do you see anything or whatever? And she's like, no. And you know what? That was a very big misrepresentation and definitely a lie of what happens in that movie. That's basically the whole plot line of John Wick, is what happens with this dog.
And you understand why he does what he does.
And I understand why he does what he does. And that's why I said in the unfortunate side effects of Heartbreak and Magic episode, you don't do stuff with people's pets, because I would support them going John Wick on your ass. It upsets me so much. I just can't. I can't do animal stuff.
And what's something that makes you want to barf?
John Adams, the show, because there is a scene
with, I'm like giving her the nod.
She's like nodding at me. There is a scene with John Adams' daughter where she has breast cancer. And at the time, they don't have anesthesia.
You bit down on a piece of wood.
And they like saw off her breast. And stuff with boobs in general, it's probably how guys feel about their balls. That just like, it makes me want to barf. Even the thought of getting a mammogram, that freaks me out. But specifically that scene, it makes me physically ill.
That was a really tough
one. I don't even like talking about it.
No, that's a really good one. It's really difficult to watch.
Trigger warning for John Adams.
There's a few things in John Adams you might want to be aware of. So the tar and feathering scene in that, that's one that makes me want
to
barf.
What a wonderful note to end on. We're like, ew, I'm stressing out, I'm barfing.
It's on
brand. Get to know us.
Well, that was fun. So thank you to everyone who sent in their questions. Like Kate said at the top of the episode, you can always send us questions.
Yeah.
And maybe going forward, we will share more things that are going on in our personal life. We're still trying to find the balance of what our listeners want.
I know. If you guys literally don't care to hear about anything, we don't need to share. We don't need to talk about ourselves. That doesn't really do much for us, but we definitely want you to feel included in our lives if that's something that you want to feel. So feel free to let us know if you ever have questions about us. If you ever have questions on the books that we're reading, we obviously always announce what we're reading next at the end of each episode. So feel free to send in questions, hot takes, thoughts, whatever you would like to share with us. And we would love to share that in our episodes. We can talk all about it. So at any point, you can send us a message on Instagram or comment or wherever. I'll find it if you leave a thought somewhere.
Kate will track it down.
I'll sniff it out.
Well, on that note, we should probably announce what we are reading next.
Yes.
So coming back in 2 weeks, we are going to be talking about First Lie Wins by Ashley Elston.
I'm very excited to read this book. I've heard amazing reviews. I only know a little bit about the story, but I'm excited to get into it.
I'm excited to read another thriller.
Yeah.
Because we've had some fun with the thrillers that we've read. So I think it's going to be a good time.
So make sure to go and get your copy and read it if you haven't already so that you can join us back here in 2 weeks when we dive into the thrilling world of First Lie Wins. And in the meantime, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to our channel so you know when we put out new episodes. And also for those of you who are big Sarah J. Maas fans, we now have all 31 episodes discussing ACOTAR, Throne of Glass, and Crescent City over on our Patreon. You can find the link in the show notes. You can go join us over there for all of the SJM chat, all of the laugh cries and barfs, everything.
And we are also getting ready to launch 2 upcoming Scotland fantasy tours that are going to be taking place in October. So we are going to be launching those within, what, the next 2 weeks at this point?
Mm-hmm.
Our schedule's a bit off, but we'll be posting all about it, so you'll be kept up to date. But just know that that launch is happening. So we've got same tour on 2 different dates. So you can choose whichever one accommodates you best. So we're getting so excited.
Yes. So again, make sure to follow us on Instagram because we will be releasing all of that information.
So until next time, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.